The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Today begin chapter 18. This is Genesis chapter 18, which is called Vayera. It's the portion Vayera. Just to begin, I want to give you background, give us a kind of running head start to where we're at. What's unusual about Avraham? Avraham is the first human being who, in the world, is entering into a relationship with God. Until now, there are either people who completely nullify their existence, completely surrender themselves to God, and lose their identity in the process. Such a person was a man named Chanoch. Chanoch is this character who, of which only has a few lines mentioned about him. It says, Chanoch walked with God and he wasn't, because God took him. Chanoch, according to commentators, is completely delivered his identity to the divine and thereby loses his identity. And he wasn't, because God took him. Then there are other people who have no sense of relation with God and think they are God, so to speak. Or by a God, an idol. Because an idol is really God created in the image of man to serve the interests of man. That's not a relationship. Because a relationship with God doesn't mean that God serves my interests. So in a relationship there is some level of equality, some give, some take. A relationship deals with the struggle of establishing oneself with strength and yet knowing when to say yes and yet knowing when to say no. And Avram is walking this fine line of relationship. Lech Lecha is all about go to yourself. In fact, the whole story is how God cultivates a human being to experience a sense of self in the face of God. Okay? A sense of self in the face of God. Not only that, but to draw an identity which is a function of a relationship with God. Most people's identity is a function of, or drawn from, their family, or their city, or their country, or it's a function of their money, or their talent, or their property. But all these things are temporal things, because when, God forbid, if your identity is a function of your money, what happens if, God forbid, you lose your money? Right? Well, there goes your identity. What if your identity is a function of your family, and God forbid you lose your family? There goes your identity. But when your identity is based on a relationship with God, that means your identity, your personal definition, is defined to the inclusion of divinity. Your identity, which is defined by your relationship with God, means God becomes part of your identity, and you become of an eternal state. As Leo Tolstoy said about the Jews, they are the embodiment of eternity. It's a very heavy statement to say. And that is the uniqueness of this identity. Man who is chosen to identify with God. And that's one of the fundamental themes of the entire Torah. You shall be holy because I am holy. Well, what does one have to do with the other? The human can draw holiness, which is completeness and perfection, through identifying with the most complete, with the most perfect. And this is what Avram is doing throughout his life. He is becoming more identified with God. Okay, and as we mentioned, you know, they did it. Of course, there's no proof, but it's an interesting suggestion and reflection. It says that when they did a psychological test of word association, they would say cat, people say dog, mother, father, right, brother, sister. They said Jew, people said God. They said God, people said Jew. It's a very interesting thing. The Jews have been identified with God. And when there is an upswing of atheism, you will see an upswing, unfortunately, of anti-Semitism. Okay? Because the Jews are identified with divinity. That the whole life has been in devotion to God. Okay. And this is what Avram is doing, and it comes to its climax. Because the climax of Avram's identity is his name will be changed as well as his body. Okay? He will actually physically manifest this relationship with God. Okay? Through the covenant. Okay? Through the covenant. And God reveals himself to Avram saying, I am El Shaddai. And we learned numerous midrashim, numerous aspects of the oral tradition that says, I am the God who said enough. Enough that the servant should be equated to the king. And so the midrash says that at that point, it's as if God just gave the human being his royal scepter. Okay? And the human being has ascended to such a place where there's that kind of direct relationship with God. And this is what Avram successfully accepted, and he has his name changed, okay? And it's not from Bernstein to Burns, right? It's a different kind of name change. It's becoming even a more Jewish name rather than a less Jewish name. Because instead of being Avram, his name will be Avraham. And Avraham, number one, in a simple meaning, means a father of many nations, which means his vision is universal. He is not accepting this covenant only on behalf of himself and his seed. But this will have meaning for all of mankind, universal man. You will become a father to many nations. As well as Kabbalistically, Avraham, and the Zohar talks about it, means that God is giving Avraham one letter of his own name. Okay? One level letter of his own name. Yud, the hey, the vav, and the hey, God shears with the human being the last hey of his own name. It becomes part of the human name. Okay? Avraham. Alright. Well, this is an incredible level that Avraham had reached. And it says that when God spoke to him, and he has this new revelation, which is in the name of Elohim, which is a name which suggests intimacy and direct relationship. It is that name which God created the world and gave the world a certain distinct substance. And now man experiences a distinct substance to himself by encountering God in that name, Elohim. And Avram falls on his face, and the old tradition says that Avram never fell on his face again after the circumcision. Which means that the evolution of human consciousness is in the direction of assuming a greater sense of personal strength and confidence. The very opposite of what most people think is a religious experience. Most people think that the direction of the religious experience is towards greater states of surrender and lack of identity. As I mentioned, Schleiermacher said, the goal of man is to strive to annihilate your personality and live in the one and the all. And in Judaism, it's the opposite. You are striving to establish your personality. You're aspiring to establish your individuality, yet within the state of surrender to the whole context. It's a balance. It's a fine line that we walk, which is the line of all relationships between how much to establish myself and how much to let go. Okay? How much to surrender. It's always a creative tension. And so Avram will no longer fall on his face again. And he circumcises himself, and he circumcises his son, Yishmael. Now Yishmael is the father, the granddaddy, of all the Arabs. Which is pretty amazing, because this granddaddy of all the Arabs was circumcised. Okay? And that really means something. Remember when my wife gave birth to Nuriel, our recent son. So she was in the hospital, we gave birth in a place called Misgav Ladak, which is considered to be the humanistic universal hospital because both Jews as well as Arabs are giving birth there. And so my wife was in a room with an Arab woman, which is really a nice and beautiful experience. And so the Mo'el, who is the fellow who does circumcisions, his name is Yossel, he's a pretty famous Mo'el in Jerusalem, thousands and thousands of children were circumcised by him. So he goes around to the hospitals and he drops his card, you know, whenever he sees a little, you know, blue card for a boy, right? So he drops his little card and visits the various rooms and says, you know, my name's Yesele, I do circumcisions and, you know, rates are fine, you know. So whatever, he goes around and he goes into our room and he says to my wife, well, you know, my I'm a mohel, and okay, fine. And then he continues into the room as he's about to introduce himself to this Arab woman. And my wife saw him going, so she called him. She says, no. This woman is Arab, right? And he said to my wife, I know. And he walks up to this lady, and he speaks to her in Arabic, right? And he gives her his card. And as he's walking out, my wife just can't help but ask, what is going on? So she says, excuse me, what are you doing? And he said, who do you think performs their circumcisions? Right? They also circumcise their children. Okay? Even though originally Yishmael circumcised himself or was circumcised at age 13, and traditionally Arabs should be circumcising themselves at 13, and aren't you happy you're not Arab, right? They now circumcise their children at a much younger age when they don't really get a chance to ask their opinion. So he says that he goes to like Kfar Jabula, right? And he does their circumcisions. So it's really quite amazing. It's really quite amazing, and it's really something to think about, because it's no accident that we have so much problems with the Arabs. Okay? Because they're not coming out of left field. They have a certain merit because they are descendants of Abraham. They are monotheists. Okay? They do have a very strong sense of values, even though some of those values are a little verkrumpt, unfortunately. And they have a certain connection to the covenant. So it's serious what's going on between the Jews and the Arabs. It's not like simple at all. Okay. So Yishmael is also circumcised. And that brings us now to the next scene, chapter 18, Vayera. And in Vayera, Abraham is sitting at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. And what I would like you to do for the next 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, I would like you to read chapter 18. And I want you to, on a piece of paper, delineate the sequence of events. Get a handle on, hey, what's this all about? What would you perceive are the basic points of it? And then ask questions. Okay? Ask questions. Well, why this? And is there any extra pieces here? Is there anything that was repeated? Is there something a little odd, simply ambiguous? Every kind of question you can ask. But I can tell you now that we will predominantly work on the first four verses, as well as the scene of Avraham's negotiations with God in attempt to save this wicked city, Sodom. Okay? So let's take time off to do that. Okay, so we're chapter 18. And let's read together. And let's pull it apart. So it says, V'yira alav Hashem. And Hashem, God, appeared upon him. What's a little strange? Anyone feel something a little weird about this? God appeared upon him. Well, what does it mean to appear upon him? God appeared upon him. Generally, as the Or HaChaim points out, it generally says, V'yira Hashem elav. And God appeared to him. But here you have the elav to him or upon him before the name. V'yira alav Hashem. So it certainly implies something. What else is strange about this? What's strange about this? Remember, this is the beginning of a portion called Vayera, which is its own portion. The last portion is called Lech Lecha. This is its own portion. What's a little strange about this? God appeared to him. What's a little weird about that? Well, to who? It's obvious to who? It's to Avram. So, but there is something problematic. What's problematic about it? Why doesn't it say Abraham? Okay? It says, to him. Okay? It should have said Abraham. Do you follow this? It doesn't make sense to say to him. It's a new chapter. It's really not proper, you know, to start a paragraph without using the name. And so therefore, if it doesn't use his name, what must that tell us? I mean, we assume that it should have his name because this is a new chapter, this is a new paragraph, and it doesn't have his name, therefore we must realize what? That it's not a new chapter, that they're actually connected, okay? So there must be some reason why this is telling us that it's connected, okay? All right. And God appears to him. We're just asking some questions, and then we'll try and answer them together. Then says, and God appeared to him at the trees of Mamre, the oaks of Mamre. And did anyone have a question regarding that? Well, why at the oaks of Mamre? Well, why not? You have to ask a good question. You just can't ask any old question. Now, why not at the oaks of Mamre? And what's strange about saying the oaks of Mamre? Well, is it really the style of the Chumash to give me details of places? Right? Not that much, especially this place. I mean, what's the difference? God appeared to Avram. It very rarely ever said where God appeared to Avram before. So why all of a sudden now does it tell me that this is where God appeared to Avraham? Okay? And Avram is sitting at the door of the tent. And what's a little strange about that? What is he doing after such a major operation at age 99, right? What is he doing sitting in the heat of the day in the door of his tent? Why does he take off and go somewhere, you know, where no one can find him? Okay? Somewhere to rest and relax. But he's not resting, he's not relaxing, he's not even lying down. He's sitting at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. Okay? So we must ask ourselves, why is he doing that? Alright, then he lifts up his eyes, and behold, he sees three people standing upon him, or that means immediately there. And he runs towards them from the door of his tent, and he bows down. Which is a little strange, but in their custom, in their culture, that's the way one shows incredible humbleness to a guest. It's like, I'm your humble servant, you're my guest. Okay, and the guest is like my master. And in fact, he says to them, he says, V'yomer Adonai, Master, im na matzati chen beinech, if I have found favor in your eye, al na tavor me'alavdecha, please do not pass by your servant. Okay, everyone with us over here? Chapter 18, verse 3. Who is he speaking to? Ah, so this is the problem. Is he speaking to the strangers or he's speaking to Hashem? Well, which one do you think it is? Well, if it's to the people, then there's a problem with the verse. Well, that's just a translation. But if it's to the people, then there's a problem with the verse. What's the problem? How many people did he see? Three people. And so how many people is he speaking to?
One.
And therefore, that gives us the hint that he's speaking to God. Now, if he's speaking to God, then what is he actually saying? He's saying, please, my master, if I'm favoring your eyes, don't pass your servant, which means what? Well, so what's he saying? Yeah, he's saying, God, do you mind waiting here? I'll be back in a second. And that's a very amazing thing to say. And that is certainly one authentic understanding of this verse, that he actually turns to God, who was just by his tent, and he says, excuse me, I'll be back in a second. Okay? Or he could be speaking to the strangers, but he would then be speaking to the leader of the three, understanding that the other two would follow them. So we'll have to deal with who's he speaking to in a second. And then he goes into this thing and he gets them all this food. And for our purpose at this moment, this is sufficient. So let's go back. Rashi says something very interesting. Rashi comments, and remember, Rashi never says anything of his own. There's nothing original about Rashi. All Rashi does is he draws from oral tradition and basically edits out oral traditions and sticks them next to verses which would help those verses make more sense. Okay? That's all. Okay? He never says his own stuff. Everything is oral tradition. But his criteria of which oral tradition he selects to bring is the one that would make the most sense out of the verse. Alright. So he says something very strange. He says that God appeared upon him to visit the sick. That's what it means. Why would Rashi say that? Why is that critical for the simple meaning of this verse? To visit the sick. Why is that critical? I mean, you know, God appeared upon him. That's it. But Rashi brings this oral tradition and says, no, it was to visit the sick. This is a visit of the sick. A very strange thing to say. And again, that's a very nice idea. We learn how important it is to visit the sick. Even God visits the sick. But I mean, that's really simplistic. Let's face it. This must be teaching us something very deep. It must be critical to understand that God is visiting the sick. Otherwise, I'd look at this verse and say, what? This verse doesn't make any sense. And indeed, this verse does not make any sense. Why does this verse not make any sense? What is unusual about this revelation that he just had? What's unusual about this revelation he just had? Well, in general, yeah.
We don't know the purpose.
We don't know the purpose. Why don't we know the purpose? What about it gives us a feeling we don't know the purpose? But why do we not know the purpose of this meeting, this visit? What's unusual about this visit unlike any other visit? God doesn't say anything. There is no place in the Bible until now that God appears to someone and doesn't say anything. Okay? Nothing. And God appeared to Abram. That's it. And then Abram sees these three strangers and says, excuse me, could you wait a second? But God doesn't say anything to Abraham. Until now, all revelations have a very clear purpose. It's for the purpose of communicating something. Okay? Regarding the future. Abram, do this. I want you to do that. You know, some kind of purposeful, clear relationship. But here, God doesn't say anything, and therefore, Rashi's disturbed by that. So he brings an oral tradition that makes all the sense out of this. That this wasn't a visit for the purpose of communicating, to impart, to convey some information. Why was this? This was for the purpose of visiting the sick. Now, what's the difference between visiting the sick and meeting someone to communicate? What's the difference? It means that I'm visiting you just for the sake of visiting you. Just to be with you. Right? There's no futuristic concern. I just want to be there beside you. Right? And that's an amazing thing. That's a very high level, because when I visit you because I have something to say to you, so that's not the perfect relationship. Because you are an instrument for me to convey, I have to get something done, we've got a plan, we've got to meet. But what about meeting just for the sake of meeting? No future involved, right? It's for the sake of the moment of being together, just to be together. This is the highest level. This is the highest level that you could imagine. A divine visitation, just for the sake of the visit itself. Wow, this is unbelievable. And it's for that reason that it does not say Abraham, because this is directly the continuation of what just happened. Because what just happened, he didn't just circumcise himself. What did he just do? He just established a pure relationship with the divine. And he just performed and fulfilled this mitzvah. And what is the reward? Divine visitation. That's the reward. In other words, Avram is sitting there in the door of his tent, having this incredible mystical encounter with the divine. Wow. That's the reward of a mitzvah. Right? That's really the reward. What's the reward of doing an act of love? The love itself. That's it. Right? It's the fulfillment of the relationship that act expressed. That's it. What more could you ask for? What is the reward of a mitzvah? It says in the Torah, the reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah. I mean, the reward of the mitzvah is the mitzvah. It's the opportunity to be engaged in a relationship with the divine. To be identified with the divine. To be enjoined with the divine. What more could you ask for than a life which is of that kind of intimacy with God? That's the reward. And in fact, that's what the Rambam Maimonides says. Well, he doesn't really say it. It's drawn from the tractate Brachot. The Talmud says that what is Olam Haba? What is this ecstasy, this world to come all about? The righteous will be sitting with their crowns on their head, drawing and basking in the splendor of God. That's it. And that is where Avram is right now. He is having an Olam Haba, a world to come experience. Because he's sitting there just drawing and enjoying the ecstasy of the intimacy with the divine. And the Rambam says that what is this crown that's on the head of the righteous when they're sitting there, which is what he's doing. He's sitting there. Okay? So the Rambam says the crown is knowledge. Knowledge of God. And that really is what Olam Haba is all about. In Olam Haba, a human being will have an intimate knowledge of God. We learned that the word da'at is unusual. It's not like chachma or bina, which is wisdom or comprehension or insight. Da'at is realization. Da'at is this intimate connection. It's not just you know about it, right? In English terminology, da'at is the most intimate connection, which is used for even the intimate connection between a man and a woman, to know. And therefore, this is what Avram is experiencing. God has come to visit Avram only for whose sake? Avram's sake. Until now, while God reveals himself to man, well, it's for God's sake, you know, something's got to happen in this world, there's a message to be transmitted, there's a world that's in plan and has to be fulfilled. Not here. This is the highest of experiences that a person can have, this metaphysical sense of intimacy in direct encounter with God. And he's, you know, according to the Kabbalah, he's at the door of the tent, which is suggestive of kind of being in and out. He's not in his tent, he's not outside of his tent. He's in this strange realm, right? This strange realm called the in the door. All right? Now, why is it at Alono Memre? Why is it over there? So Rashi brings down an oral tradition. That says that the reason why God reveals himself to Avram and this great experience is happening here is because, you know, there's an interesting midrash that says that before Avraham circumcised himself, he had two close buddies, a fellow by the name of Mamre and a fellow by the name of Eshkol. Okay? And they were friends of Avraham. When Avram had this revelation bidding him to circumcise himself, he asked his friends, what do you think? Do you hear this? He asked his two Gentile friends. They were not part of his movement. And he asked them, you know, Mamre, what do you think? I just got a revelation from God. Can you imagine this, right? I just got a revelation from God telling me to circumcise myself and enter into eternal covenant. What do you think? Right. Eshkol, you're my buddy. You're my friend. What do you think? Well, so Eshkol said to Avram, no way, Jose. Don't do it. Right? Don't do it. And Mamre said, go for it. Now let's think about this. Why would Avram ask his friends whether they should do it or not? Do you think if they were both to tell him not to do it, he would not do it? What do you think? He would do it anyways. I mean, you know, he just had a revelation of God. We see the kind of unique devotion this man has. Right? So if he would have done it anyways, if you ask someone their advice, and yet you know inside you're going to go ahead and do it anyways, why would you ask their advice? This is very important to understand as a Jew. Avram asks these two Gentiles whether he should circumcise himself in order to convey to them that what I'm about to do is taking you into consideration. I'm not doing this just for myself. This is not just a particular path that I'm on. This is my trip and it has no universal concern. I'm doing this on behalf of the world. And I want you guys to be part of this decision. Because I'm not doing this for my own, so to speak, nirvana of some sort, right? This is for the world, because of the world. It's not in spite of the world. It's on behalf of the world. Like we learned, the difference between Noah's chosenness and Abraham's chosenness was Noah's chosenness was a rejection of the world. When God said to Noah, right, I choose you to live on and everyone else will perish, that was a rejection of the world. But the chosenness of Abraham is not a rejection of the world. It's God's affirmation and commitment to bringing this world to the fruition that it rightfully should reach. And therefore the Jew has to accept their identity, not in spite of the world, on behalf of the world. Right? And therefore by sharing this with his friends, he was saying, listen, this is not my own trip over here. I mean, I'm going to do something which is obviously going to distinguish me from you. Okay? And obviously, it's going to separate us. I'm going to be very different. I'm going to accept a very different culture. I mean, you know, I'll look different, physically look different. Okay? All my friends will know there's the Yid. Okay? But why am I doing that? Why am I doing something which apparently is isolating me from you? It's because of you. Because what I'm about to do in the fulfillment of this covenant is on behalf of man, for the purpose of man. Because through you the world will be blessed. And therefore he gave them the opportunity to partake in the covenant by being participants in the decision. And you know what the decision was? And he's still going to do it on behalf of man. But he gave them the opportunity to share in it. And Mamre, in fact, said, Avram, I'm so happy. I'm so happy you're being Jewish, and I'm so happy you're following your own ways and your own rituals. That's a friend, right? When your Gentile friend encourages you to be Jewish, right? That's fantastic. And in fact, Mamre said, go for it. Eshkol said, no. And Mamre indeed profited from the covenant of the Jew. God reveals himself in the portion of Mamre. You can be sure Mamre felt this energy, this presence in his domain. And he too benefited from it. Okay? And that's in fact what it says in the Messianic times. You know, last program we had a phenomenal opportunity to invite these three people who are the heads of a new movement in America called B'nai Noach. These are people who... these two priests took the crosses out of their churches and believed that the Jews are the chosen people, that the covenant with the Jews have never been broken, and that the Jews are to be a light unto the people, and that we Gentiles should adhere to the seven universal principles, the Noetic principles, and we seek the light of the Jews. And this Christian fellow, who used to be Christian, now a B'nai Noach, he says, I think I told you this story, says in Zechariah 8, then the future, Jerusalem, the children will be playing in the streets once again. And he said, last Shabbat, I said to my friends, I've got to go out into the center of the old city to see the fulfillment of prophecy. Because the fulfillment of prophecy, I want you to know, my friends, being that I wasn't Jewish, I was able to come into the old city before 67. And I'm telling you, this place was desolate. You never saw one child playing in the streets of Jerusalem. And now I'm able to sit and watch the streets of Jerusalem with the children playing in the streets. This is the fulfillment of Zechariah. No one ever would have believed it. No one would ever have dreamed that Jerusalem would have returned to the Jews and that once again children are playing in the streets. He said, but I want to tell you what happens right after that prophecy of Zechariah. It says, and the world will grab hold of the tzitzit of the Jews. There will be 10 Gentiles grabbing onto one tzitzit. Can you imagine how many? Grabbing onto the tzitzit of the Jews and saying, let us join and follow the Jews and serve God. So this Gentile fellow grabbed hold of the tzitzit of the fellow sitting beside him. Grabbed hold of him and says, we have come to grab hold to your tzitzit. You are the light to the nations. We have come to learn from you. You should have seen the participants of Israelite. A lot of them don't even know anything about Judaism. And these Gentiles who know more about Judaism than Jews are saying, you are to be our light. You are to be our priest. We're waiting for your light. Blew our minds. Right? Just blew our minds. This is really the universal vision that the Jews have. That the Gentiles will say, yes, let's join the Jews. Right? Let's benefit from their inspiration, from their history. Because their history isn't a private history. It wasn't for them that they were chosen. It was for the world. And this is what Avram already at this point demonstrates by asking his friends, what do you think? Should I do this? He wants them to know, hey, I'm doing this in consideration of you. And Mamre said, go for it. And in fact, he profited from the experience, as well as, why is Avram sitting at the door of his tent? couldn't a man who just endured such an operation at age 99, couldn't he find a more comfortable place to be? And the old tradition says it's clear. He was standing there waiting for guests. He wanted so much to demonstrate loving kindness to strangers. Why? Hey, you could wait a day, 2 days, go to Hawaii for 2 weeks and just, recoup. Because what concerned Avraham? He wanted to show the world that now that I'm a Jew, now that I have become so specific and so particular, it is not in conflict to my universal vision. I want to show you that it only inspires me more to do something for mankind. And therefore, he was in pain. That was Avram's pain. Greater pain for Avram than circumcision was not being able to show compassion. And especially in a situation where he's afraid, well, maybe people wouldn't relate to him. Maybe people would think, there he goes. He just left the world. He went on his trip. And he said, I don't care about the world. And he wanted to demonstrate to himself and to the world that to be a Jew means I care about the world. And to accept the covenant is on behalf of the world, for the purpose, for the sake of the world, not just for the sake of himself. And so he opens, he lifts up his eyes, and sure enough, here comes three strangers. Now, there are different opinions. Some say everyone agrees that these three strangers are angels. Okay? Some say these were real people, and some say this was a vision, but in his eyes, they were real. But whatever, these three strangers are actually angels. And the old tradition says that God purposely made it a hot day, so to speak, so that no one would pass by in order not to bother Avraham. But when God saw how pained Avram was, right, he was more pained by not having anybody to show kindness to. So God said, I'll give him some guests. Poor fellow. Okay? Poor fellow. Because that was his joy. His joy was only to give. And so here comes these three angels, and Avram rights is out there. Can you imagine at 99, with that kind of an operation, he runs out there to these strangers, and now we have this problem. He says, God, don't pass me by. Wait here, I'll be right back, but I gotta take care of these strangers. And you should know, he doesn't know who these strangers are. In fact, he says, the first thing he says to him is, please take a little water and wash your feet. Now, why wash your feet? Okay? So the Gemara says, because in those days, the idolaters would bow down to the dust of their feet. So he would say, wash your feet, because maybe these guys are idolaters. He wouldn't want to bring idolaters in, so he would first tell them he's going to bring them in anyways. But he first suggests to them, to wash their feet. He's not just running out there because he saw some yid with payas walking in the desert. He ran out to do that kind of compassion, not only for a non-Jew, but for someone who was the antithesis of Judaism, an idolater. That's amazing. What is the first reaction to Brit? Is an actual care for the world. Okay? And he runs out there and he does this. And we're just amazed. Because what's so amazing about this? Isn't this pretty outrageous? This man is in ecstasy right now. He's in no less Olam Haba. He's reached the climax of what most people perceive as the peak religious experience. He is having this mystical, spiritual, intimate encounter with the divine. He is enjoying the splendor of the infinite, the almighty. And can you imagine? I mean, if I had that experience, and I was sitting in my house and having this incredible, spiritual peak experience, and all of a sudden, what do I hear at the door? I mean, how would you feel? Like, oh no. Just when I was having inspiration, just when I was having this incredible encounter, I mean, the climax, the peak, the wow, peak, P-E-E-K experience, a peak of the divine. Wow. Would I go running out to bring some stranger in my house and break that moment of inspiration? That's amazing. This is unbelievable. This is really unbelievable. The Gemara says, we learn from here, that greater than receiving the very face of God is receiving guests into your home. Wow. Really? That's really hard to believe, no? Greater than receiving the face of God, isn't that the ultimate of religious experience? To meet God face to face? Greater than meeting God face to face is to say to God, excuse me one second, I've got to go do chesed. I've got to do loving kindness to this stranger who's an idolater who doesn't even believe in you. Wow. How could I understand such a thing? How could I understand such a thing? That's even greater. And probably that's even a greater experience than Olam Haba. And that's what the Torah says in Perkei Avot. One moment of good deeds in this world is greater than one moment of the tranquility of the next world. People say, I can't wait to get into the next world. You see that Avram just kind of left a next world experience in order to be one moment in this world. It's really a misconception to think the Jews are so much into the next world. We're very much into the moment of this world that I can do an act of compassion. So how can I understand such a thing? You know, there's a famous Jewish philosopher. There were a number of things that he wrote that were clearly authentic and very important formulations of basic Jewish principles. He tells a story. He was in his home having a mystical experience, a divine visitation. He was absorbed in this higher state, an altered state of consciousness. And all of a sudden, he hears a knock at the door. Well, he admits a little disturbed by the disturbance. He pulls himself away from this ecstasy and he opens the door. And there's this fellow that he doesn't know, some stranger. And the fellow clearly wants to come in, and Buber says, and so, I mean, I invited him in. You know, it's kind of hard to say to him, excuse me, I was just in the middle of my mystical encounters. And it's clear this man wants to speak to him, so Buber asks him to come in, he sits down with him and tries to be patient and open, and the fellow has something to say. But it was just very awkward. And the fellow felt awkward, and he felt he was disturbing, and he said, I'm really very sorry, and I'll come back another time. And so he left. Well, a day or so later, that this fellow was killed, and was overwhelmed. Because he realized that this fellow came because he had something he wanted to speak about, and Brewer wasn't there. He might have been there in body, but he realized he wasn't there. And that's when he realized, my gosh, what am I into? Spiritual materialism? I want to have a God experience? When isn't the essence of Judaism being in a relationship with God? And this is where he developed his own notion of responsibility. The ability to respond. You see, a person could be in a forest, a beautiful, beautiful nature scene. And they're having the experience. How do you know if one's having a God experience or one is enjoying a God encounter? Which one left their garbage? That's the answer. Because if you have a God encounter, then that will leave you with a sense of responsibility. You will say, for me, the world was created and I'm responsible for it. God created this world for me, I'm responsible for it. I wouldn't leave my garbage. But you can have someone who's out there meditating, wow, who knows, painting these scenes and just being absorbed and inspired by its beauty, having a God experience, right? But that's selfish. That's what idolatry is all about. I want to have a God. You go and buy yourself a God. This is my God. But a God encounter generates and instills a sense of responsibility. not only to God, but to all of God's creatures. As Buber said, in every particular thou is reflected the eternal thou. And so Buber realized that greater than experiencing and having the face of God is receiving guests and the face of guests. And therefore, who did Avram really speak to? Did he speak to God and said, "My master, don't pass me by"? Or did he speak to these people? It's more than both. It was most probably both. Because each human being in the eyes of Abraham, in the eyes of an authentic Jew, is no less than the reflection of the eternal thou. And the greatest responsibility that I can demonstrate to my Creator is to demonstrate responsibility to His creatures. And that is a greater indication that I'm truly encountering God when I go out there and I do something in the name of God. This is really powerful.